Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working from home on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, February 5th, 2021. 300 government and political party officials are kicked out of hotels in South Sudan's capital, Juba.
We are going to start as already we cut off the power and the water effectively from 12. And then we're demanding them to leave immediately from 12 afternoon today. The response, they said, we have nowhere to go. Some of them even replied they will leave the country to go anywhere.
And the World Food Program is appealing for millions of dollars for Ethiopian refugees in Sudan.
WFP rapidly responded to the influx of new refugees from day one, providing food for hot meals and high energy biscuits at the reception centers, which are on the border. We have also given logistical support to the humanitarian community, like transportation, flights, kitchen utensils, etc., fuel, and other things as well.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Hotels and apartment owners in the South Sudan's capital, Juba, have evicted more than 300 government and political party officials for non-payment of outstanding accommodation bills totaling to $50 million. The hotel and apartment owners say the officials have been staying in their facilities since 2018. Majority of the officials came to Juba as part of the National Pre-Transitional Committee, a body monitoring the implementation of the revitalized peace deal. Some hotels have shut down electricity and water supply to force the officials to leave. For VOA News, Dingma God reports from Juba.
The officials were first brought to the hotels and apartments in 2018 by the now defunct National Pre-Transitional Committee, a body that oversaw the implementation of the pre-transitional activities of the revitalized peace deal. Last month, nine hotels in Juba gave Tutkeo Gatluak, presidential advisor for security affairs and the head of the National Transitional Committee, 5 days to pay the arrears of more than $10 million owed for delegates' accommodations. The hotel owners said if the debt isn't paid within the month, the officials will be evicted. A joint press statement released yesterday, signed by managers of 18 hotels, which are members of the Hotels and Catering Association of South Sudan, said the process of evicting more than 300 officials who have used their facilities without payment since 2018 began at noon yesterday. Kot Maker, manager of the Royal Hotel, says his hotel has cut the water and power supply to the officials' rooms and have demanded they leave the premises.
We are going to start as already we cut off the power and the water effectively from 12, and then we're demanding them to leave immediately from 12 afternoon today. The response, they said, we have nowhere to go. Some of them even replied they will leave the country to go anywhere they like. So that thing, we left it. We told it we have nothing. We told them that one we cannot answer. You go to the NTC to answer, or you go to Chairman Tut to address your concern.
One of the evicted officials who spoke on condition of anonymity says it is inhumane for hotel owners to kick them out. He says he has no house in Juba and does not know where to go.
We feel so bad that we have been thrown out at the end, and nobody is taking care of us from now on. And we are actually, power has already been disconnected from our rooms. And maybe soon, before nightfall, we are asked to leave the hotel. And we do not know where we are heading from here. Even we do not have the time to pack even our belongings in the room. And even once we pack our belongings, where do we go? There are security concerns, there are a number of issues. And now it is already, as I speak, it is already 2 o'clock.
Maker says his hotel is using peaceful means to evict government officials.
Well, the majors is like, you know, we have no gun. We have to pursue them. We have to talk to them politely. We have to convince them to leave peacefully. Because if they refuse, we have also to call the police in to evict them. And then if they refuse, the expenses, the losses that will be counted on them from today, then you have to pay your own. You have to pay by your own. Not the government to pay, but they should pay.
The general manager of South Sudan Hotel Buluk, Mel Garang Yot, spoke on behalf of the 18 hotels and apartment owners at Thursday's news conference in Juba. Yot says hotel managers have repeatedly tried, without success, to speak to Tut Keo Gatluak, chairperson of the National Transitional Committee, about the outstanding bills.
We have been waiting for our payment. We give a first warning and a second warning last month, and the chairman promised us to clear our money, and until now he has not paid any money. We got from other media that chairman stated he paid some hotel, but when we asked ourselves, nobody been clear, so we decide we come with the final conclusion to chase out all the customer from NPTC, that is including more politicians, generals, who came for implementation of peace.
Yot says some hotels that were not part of the initial effort have since joined the other hotels in calling on the National Transitional Committee to pay out.
The problem, last time we were demanding more than $10 million USD, but now we realize some hotels were not with us before. So we have now, we include Pyramid Hotel, we have Farm Africa Hotel, we have Juma Landmark, we have Juba Grand and Crown Hotel. So these people, they are demanding more than that even. So we don't know now, maybe it is more than 20 or more than 50 million.
Earlier this week, presidential advisor Gatluak told reporters that the government had paid part of the massive hotel bill for officials.
We have paid some, and some are not yet. This is a government, and its debts cannot get finished.
Yot says the hotels have not received any payment from the government. He says the hotel owners are having a hard time paying the salaries of employees and maintaining their facilities because of the millions of dollars owed by the National Transitional Committee. Last year, some government officials were evicted from the Palm Africa and Pyramid Hotels for failing to pay their bills. For VOA News, I am Ding Magot in Juba.
The transitional government of national unity in South Sudan has agreed to speed up the graduation of the unified forces selected from the various parties to the revitalized peace agreement. The forces have been at various training camps for about a year, and some of them say they are living in dire conditions. A commander at one of the training camps say the trainees are threatening to desert the training center if the government does not graduate and deploy them within this month. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
Thousands of unified forces at the Rajaf Unified Training Center took part in a military parade a week ago. The challenges facing trainees are visible. During the parade, some of the men and women marched barefooted. While some were dressed in police uniforms, many others were wearing civilian clothing, a strong indication that there were not enough uniforms to go around. Other trainees looked pale, emaciated and physically weak. 30-year-old Isaac Juma Angelo has been training for several months at the center. Aside from having almost no food, Juma says the training camp's medical center is out of regular medicine.
If there's no food to my colleagues, I'm supposed to go into the bush, cut some trees, make the charcoals, and I go, I buy it away. Then I get the money. I buy some food from there, I can share with my colleagues.
The only microscope at the medical center does not work because there are no reagents. Christine Odeng Mayuen, director of medical center Rajaf, says the medical center has not been operational since the unified forces reported for training early last year. Major General Olau Adiang represents the South Sudan Opposition Alliance, or SSOA, at the Joint Transitional Security Committee, or JTSC, the mechanism in charge of training the unified forces.
We are facing this challenge. We cannot deny this. And everybody knows that shortage of food, shortage of medicine, and training centers. Some forces is needed. And of course, you cannot keep forces in a place where they are starving. These are human beings. If they see that there is no food, they will desert, definitely.
Adiang says, although the unified forces are ready to graduate, other challenges exist, such as clear criteria for deployment as well as screening of all of the forces. Some 9,000 of the estimated 45,000 unified forces have been screened in the 17 training camps across the country, according to Adiang. He says the reasons for the delay in graduating the forces are beyond the scope of the Joint Transitional Security Committee. He says it is the responsibility of the country's top leaders to decide when the unified forces will graduate. Government spokesperson Michael Makwe refutes allegations that the main reason unified forces have not graduated is a lack of funds.
Well, this is not the case. The case is that the forces, the opposition Kulu, are not yet organized. And the fact that they are not organized, they have a lot of ranks without soldiers. There are a lot of officers without soldiers. We are telling them, you reorganize your forces according to the command formation. And based on that, you will be in a position to determine the rank. They want us to graduate them with all their ranks without soldiers.
Adiang says all parties to the peace deal, including the South Sudan People's Defense Forces, need to reorganize their forces. SPLM-AIO, one of the principal parties, says the delay in graduating the forces is directly tied to a pronounced lack of resources. Colonel Lampol Gabriel is the SPLM-AIO deputy spokesperson.
But the most important thing we can do is only advise our forces to remain calm and continue being in the training center, and also push the leadership in Juba to make sure that resources are availed and a decision is reached. The most important thing right now is the issue of decision and resources. Otherwise, these forces can be graduated in a single time.
On Tuesday, South Sudan's presidency issued a statement saying efforts to hold a graduation of the unified forces should be expedited so that it happens soon. The statement did not name a date for the graduation. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
The United Nations World Food Programme is appealing for nearly $174 million to provide food and nutritional assistance to more than 60,000 Ethiopian refugees who cross into eastern Sudan in recent months. WFP's country director for Sudan says the international community needs to move very fast by providing necessary assistance to help the refugees overcome the shock of being far from their homes. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
Hamid Nouri, WFP's country director for Sudan, says there are more than 60,000 Ethiopian refugees who fled violence in the Tigray region beginning in early November last year and are now stuck in camps in eastern Sudan. He says the refugees are in urgent need of basic humanitarian assistance like food.
WFP rapidly responded to the influx of new refugees from day one, providing food for hot meals and high-energy biscuits at the reception centers, which are on the border. We have also given logistical support to the humanitarian community, like transportation, flights, kitchen utensils, etc., fuel, and other things as well.
Nouri says it is essential that the international community move quickly to provide assistance. Nouri says flexible funding from Germany, Norway, Switzerland, the United Kingdom, and the United States enabled WFP to divert resources in the amount of $5.2 million to respond to the immediate needs of the refugees right at the start of this emergency. Despite these generous contributions, Nouri says their needs remain high.
At the moment, WFP Sudan still requires an overall $173.8 million in funding for all our operations countrywide in the first half of this year, which is about $8.6 million will be used towards food assistance, nutritional support for the refugees arriving from Tigray over the coming months.
Earlier this week, the Japanese government announced it was donating $800,000 to the WFP office in Sudan to facilitate its operations and assist the Ethiopian refugees. Atsuo Okada, Economic Cooperation Officer at the Japanese Embassy in Khartoum, tells South Sudan in Focus that the funding is meant to help WFP provide monthly food rations, including sorghum, lentils, oil and salt to refugees fleeing Ethiopia's Tigray region.
The sudden and large-size influx was caused by the conflict in Tigray region, Ethiopia, and the government of Japan quickly decided, as a responsible member of the international community, to support the activities of the humanitarian organizations and the effort of Sudan, which is welcoming tens of thousands of refugees fleeing from violent clashes.
Okada says Japan is honored to contribute to the protection and assistance of Ethiopian people who have been displaced. He says the Japanese government hopes the money will contribute to the coordinated efforts of the UN and other international actors who are helping the displaced.
We expect our grant is used for provision of food assistance to approximately 70,000 refugees. Secondly, the installation of 40 communal shelters and sheds, as well as 100 communal latrines and 2 water supply sites. And thirdly, the transportation of approximately 20,000 refugees from border points to the designed refugee camps and settlement sites.
Nuri says the situation in the Tigray region is still tense, and it is not clear when the refugees will be able to go home. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, Ugandans react to the ICC verdict on one of the Lord's Resistance Army commanders. Find out why after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
is there something about yourself that you would like to change?
Definitely not. No, because at least I know my life has been good. I've not been entertaining bad company. So to change my life, I need to start making at least new friends again.
Life is all about learning. We learn every day. So in as much as we are still breathing, there are things we need to shed off.
Currently, I would like to change my tummy. I'm growing a pot belly, so I'm exercising. I've bought an abdomen machine that's helping me to deal with it. And I want to lose weight, probably 5-8 kilos.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Ugandan victims of the Lord's Resistance Army have welcomed the war crimes conviction of the militant group's second in command. The International Criminal Court in Hague has found LRA child soldier turned commander Dominic Ongwen guilty of 61 charges, ranging from murder, rape, kidnapping and torture. Alima Athomani reports from Kampala.
Among the charges Dominic Ongwen was convicted of Wednesday is the crime of conscripting children under the age of 15 into the LRA's senior brigade and using them to participate in hostilities. Oyet Vincent was 12 years old, living in the Lukodi Displaced Persons Camp in northern Uganda, when Lord's Resistance Army rebels launched a war against Uganda's President Yoweri Museveni in 1987. Vincent says he and other children were abducted a total of 6 times and forced to fight in the war. Vincent says he feels overwhelmed today, but adds he feels lucky to witness the verdict.
You know, it has taken long. We've been waiting for it. I feel that justice is almost at the doorside, only that I'm now waiting for the sentence. It will also bring attention to other people that irrespective of the color, whether we are short or big, we are all equal before the law.
Ongwen was found guilty on 61 of 70 counts of crimes against humanity and war crimes. The charges were for his role in attacks on four internally displaced people's camps in northern Uganda between July 2002 and December 2005. He was found guilty on charges of murder, kidnapping, torture, enslavement, rape, sexual slavery, and forced marriage, among many others. Brian Kalenge, an international war crimes lawyer working with the ICC office in Uganda, says it was important that justice prevailed.
I think this is a big step in terms of addressing psychologically the effects of that war. You know that we say there can be no peace without justice. So it was very important that Ongwen was found guilty so that we can then begin the process of reparations.
The government of Uganda lodged the case against Ongwen and other LRA leaders, including the group's supreme leader, Joseph Kony, in 2004. Uganda government spokesperson Ofwono Opondo says the verdict is a strong warning to all who want to take up arms, saying impunity will not be tolerated.
It sends a signal that no matter how long it takes, justice will always prevail if evidence is properly collected and presented to courts of law. And we hope this ruling should send a signal to everybody in Uganda, particularly those who want to take the course that Ongwen and the Kony took.
Kony, who is wanted by the ICC on charges similar to Ongwen's, remains at large. He is believed to be in the Central African Republic, but has not been definitely cited in years. Ongwen now awaits sentencing for his crimes. He faces up to 30 years in prison. For victims like Oyet Vincent, they now await a reparation session. However, Vincent says no amount of money can replace the hundreds of thousands of lives lost and destroyed. Halima Athmani for VA News, Kampala.
In a report marking World Cancer Day, the World Health Organization says COVID-19 is having a negative impact on cancer control efforts at a time when cases and deaths from the deadly disease are rising significantly. For VOA News, Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
New statistics show the number of people diagnosed with cancer globally last year reached 19.3 million, with the number of people dying increasing to 10 million. The World Health Organization reports cancer now is the second leading cause of death, with 70% of deaths occurring in low and middle income countries. WHO reports breast cancer has replaced lung cancer as the world's most commonly occurring cancer. It warns the number of new cancer cases are expected to grow significantly, reaching 30 million new cases by 2040. Andre Ilbawi of WHO's Department of Noncommunicable Diseases says the consequences of the COVID-19 pandemic on cancer control efforts have been profound.
WHO surveys have found that 50% of governments have had cancer services partially or completely disrupted because of the pandemic. We have also gathered data from the scientific community to understand the severity and the impact on cancer patients. Delays in diagnosis are common. Interruptions in therapy and/or abandonment has increased significantly.
Ilbawi notes people suffering from non-communicable diseases, including cancer, are at higher risk of severe COVID-19-related illness and death. WHO reports many cancers can be cured if they are diagnosed early and treated appropriately. It says significant advances have been made in these areas. For example, it notes cervical cancer kills some 4.5 million people yearly. These deaths, it says, can be eliminated if girls are fully vaccinated against the sexually transmitted human papillomavirus with the HPV vaccine by age 15. Health officials say individuals can do much to reduce the risk of getting cancer. A number of preventative measures have to do with lifestyle choices. Since tobacco use accounts for about 22% of cancer deaths, WHO says people should stop smoking. It recommends regular exercise, healthy diets, and the avoidance of the harmful use of alcohol. It says reducing exposure to strong sunlight for prolonged periods will protect people from the harmful ultraviolet radiation that can cause skin cancer. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
We love to hear what you think about this show. My colleague Nabil Biagio received more comments this week about issues in our news. Over to you, Nabil.
Thanks, John. Indeed, we have lots of comments today. I will start with Samuel Remo, who writes from Yay. Hi, VOA South Sudan in Focus. Although COVID-19 has made great behavior change in our lives, but the re-lockdown remains a big challenge in our economic activities where our livelihoods depend. Bidalo Camilo from Juba writes, thanks VOA for your wonderful programs by updating us on the events happening in South Sudan. Ali Simon in Jeddah from Juba writes, hello VOA, good evening. I'm so grateful to hear your people on air from Monday to Friday. However, we the citizens are so concerned about the news you people are airing. You need to extend your coverage all over the country because some parts of the country have not been captured. Your news is so good, but the quality in terms of network is so poor. We really need improvement on that. My regards to John Tanza and Ayembior. Isaac Tang in Bentiu Town writes, thanks for the initiative of South Sudan in Focus on VOA. South Sudanese are benefiting from your program so much. Keep it up, VOA is our eyes and ears. Thanks John Tanza, Nabil Biagio, Waki Simon Wudu, and Michael Atid. A listener who did not disclose his or her identity writes, Kejukeji County is now reconnected to the rest of the world. Bravo MTN South Sudan. Bravo the leadership of Honorable Governor of Central Equatorial State. We now need the road construction for business to boom and achieve a lasting peace. James Roy Majok in Bentiu Town writes, I'm appealing to the South Sudan government to allow the establishment of the Africa Union Hybrid Court as per the revitalized peace agreement on the resolution of the conflict in the Republic of South Sudan. Mading Malual Alwong from the Upper Nile State capital Malakal writes, thanks for connecting me to my favorite channel VOA. My advice to the two leaders, President Salva Kiir Mayardit and Dr. Riek Machar, is for them to reconcile South Sudanese.
Keep those comments coming. Our WhatsApp number is +1 202 630 8011. We'll air your comments every Friday. That's our show for this Friday, and we now leave you in a dancing mood with Mo Attack Mo and his song Alamat Sudan. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, wear a mask when you are in public places, and do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Alam azelega wewa, alam gajuwa ererda.